This is the Business Storytelling Show with Christoph Trapp. Name a top 20 storytelling podcast and a top 5% podcast globally, Christoph chats with thought leaders and experts to share tips and tricks that can help you tell your company's stories better to drive business results. Available wherever you listen to podcasts, live streamed on major social media channels, and part of the DB&A television network, available on most U.S. television sets and streaming on Roku and Amazon Fire. Here's Christoph with today's episode. Let's go.
Let's go, business storytellers. Hey, how's everyone doing? Welcome back. Episode 529. If you're watching on the live stream or the video version, which is available on Spotify, hopefully you've noticed my little graphic in the intro, inspired by Only Murders in the Building. Good idea. Takes a lot more work to produce because you got to remember what episode number it is. Either way, today we want to talk about writing for humans and robots. Just finished that book last night. Maddie Osman wrote it, already a number one bestseller, former Hawkeye, just like myself, once a Hawkeye, always a Hawkeye, University of Iowa, creates content for businesses. So we want to find out what goes into writing for humans and robots, because I think there is a lot of people who actually, silo those things, right? You can only do one or the other. Oh my goodness. This sounds like it's written for SEO. Honestly, everything should be written for SEO. Doesn't mean it shouldn't be readable, right, at the end of the day. But let's find out why Maddie wrote the book. Why is it a bestseller? I mean, I know it's well written, but why are people so interested in the topic, and how do we move forward as a company? So let's get her on the show here. Welcome to the Business Storytelling Show.
Boom.
Here's a little See, bit. it's harder than I make it out to be. So, welcome. Really appreciate you coming on. Tell us about the book. What prompted you to write that specific topic? And certainly there's a lot of people who are reading it. Certainly they're finding interest in it. But why is it a topic we have to discuss today?
Sure, totally. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for having me today. Always great to be in the presence of a fellow Hawkeye, the best of the Big Ten schools, if I do say so myself. But yeah, to get to your question, not that I'm biased. To answer your question, I wrote this book out of my own need. And I think that some of the best solutions come from somebody trying to solve a problem for themselves first, because then you know it's actually going to be a useful solution and not just something that you're kind of throwing out there and hoping that maybe it could help somebody, but you don't actually know because you never actually kind of tested the concept. So this book was written because a couple of years ago, I decided that I wanted to take my freelance writing business and scale it to more of an agency business model. And the question was how to do that. I have my own unique writing style, as many others also do. And in order to scale my business, I needed to find other people who could get on the same page as me as to what I see as quality content, the standards that I have for that, and even things like how to write headings or how to incorporate links or how to use visuals. So it started with the Blogsmith Style Guide, which is kind of like AP style, if you're familiar with that. It's just another take on this idea of having guidelines that people follow. And then I took the document that I had, and I saw a lot of opportunities to expand on certain concepts, giving a little bit more context, giving examples of what to do versus what not to do. Because I think with things like grammar and spelling and agreement and everything that goes into writing, it's a lot easier to sort of teach people what you want if you can give those examples of, so here's a good example, and you know, here's something that isn't going to work.
And, you know, the examples in the book are fantastic. And some people, I can already hear them scream. They're saying, oh, I know this and I know this. And some, I mean, you really take them from, I don't want to say the beginning of time, but from like basic things, right? Like, this is how you do this. Don't say this. Don't say that. And, and you know, I know for a fact that there's a lot of people who don't know, because I see it all the time. They use crap like that in their content and whatnot. So how important is that? And I think I've stated my opinion before when the Grammar Girl was on the show. You know, I think it is important. I think it's important to get the message across. But why did you find it to be necessary to include some of those tips early on in the book? Why is that important to get started?
I think it's because we're all human. You know, ultimately, we can't remember everything. We're not perfect. I find myself oftentimes forgetting best practices for things and having to kind of like look back into my own notes about things to remember, oh, this is how I do this thing. I think it's kind of like if you've ever read the book, The Checklist Manifesto, which for those who may not be familiar is about a doctor wrote it and it was based on his observations as a member of the World Health Organization, as a doctor, I think, you know, working in a hospital system and just noticing how much better things get for patients when there is a checklist to follow, even though it seems like a standard thing to do something like place an IV line, but without following proper process, it's the same thing a pilot, you know, before they fly, having a checklist of things that they need to make sure are going well and making sure that it's fueled properly, et cetera. These are all things that we know deep down, just like you said, but it's good to have reminders. And I think for my book, the idea is that it really is a reference guide, kind of like the Elements of Style. I think most writers have a copy of that on their shelves. I know I definitely do. And it's really just kind of taking a lot of the concepts from the Elements of Style, but applying them to this new global internet audience and world, really, because the Elements of Style, for example, was written back in 1918. A lot of the principles still ring true. A lot of them are still great reference material for any kind of writing. But what they didn't consider because they weren't aware of it was the internet and how that changes communications.
Yeah, the internet certainly is about, you know, making sense to people and also being found by the robots. And I think my style, you know, quite frankly, is very journalistically driven, right? Here's the facts, you know, in and out, we're done. And that actually helps with the robots because, you know, it's like they don't have to guess what I'm trying to say. If I use this word, this is what I mean. I'm trying to be creative, but I'm not trying to be creative in the sense of how, you know, how some newspaper headline writers used to be creative, right? They would use some abstract word for a headline that a search engine would never figure out today. Now, tie it all together for me when it comes to writing for the people and writing for the robots. How do you kind of, you know, mesh that together? And I kind of hinted at that earlier. I've had experiences where people, like, it's almost like they're in one corner or the other. And I'm like, there's no corners. Stop making everything into a boxing match.
Sure. Yeah. I think it starts to help. It helps to start by thinking of humans and robots as these sort of distinct entities. Humans are the ones who have empathy. They respond to empathy from other humans. And ultimately, they're the ones who can buy whatever it is you're selling. Because at least at this point in time, robots aren't sentient. Maybe your opinion has changed if you've seen the series finale of Westworld the other day. So that was a good one. I highly recommend it. But at least at this point in time, humans are the only ones who can actually buy from you. So just like Robert Cialdini says in Influence, humans buy from those they know, like, and trust. And so you're trying to basically stir all those emotions up in them with the content you create, with the marketing you do. Whereas with robots are an important user, but they're not really like a decision maker. They're not the end user of your content. They are an entity that helps connect the right human with your content at the right time. And search is one way that that happens. But I think it's also things like social news feeds. I think it's even things like if you're applying for a job and you're submitting your resume to one of those like application tracking system tools, you know, being able to show up because you, you know, incorporated the right sort of keywords and descriptions and the things that they're looking for in terms of maybe, you know, specializations you have or certifications and just kind of knowing how to play the game really is ultimately what it's all about. And it looks like we have a question here too that might actually be related to what we're talking about. So let's see. Content created by AI like Jasper, what's your opinion on it? And Julio or Julio says, the quality of the content is quite good considering it's written by AI. Having said that, there might be a lack of storytelling. So let me give you kind of my like high level thoughts on AI, because I think that's relevant in this topic of humans versus robots. I think AI is a great tool for brainstorming. I think it's a great tool for helping get ahead of writer's block. It's good for things like maybe generating some title ideas that you can further refine, a content outline. I also have an AI tool that I use in Google Docs, and I'm going to forget the name. It's not WriteSonic, but it's something like that. And that is another AI tool that I have a license for. But it basically takes the text that you've written and suggests other ways that you could rewrite it. I think those are all like amazing uses of AI. And I don't think writers should be terribly afraid of it taking their jobs, because what AI can't do is it can't art direct. What I've seen so far, it doesn't really understand formatting. It doesn't understand tone of voice. These are all still things that humans have the upper hand at. And I think the other thing is like AI can't really at this point come up with truly unique thoughts. It's basically re-spinning what's already out there. And it might do a really good job of that, but AI doesn't have the empathy that humans have. And that's why if you were to test it out, like an AI piece of content versus a human piece of content, you'd probably find that the AI one didn't actually convert anybody.
So Maddie does not need me on the show at all. She's, I think, the first guest that called out the question before I did. So I really appreciate that. I'm just producing behind the end, but that gave me a chance. I do appreciate the comment, but that gave me a chance to pull this up. And I just ran across this morning, viralpostgenerator.com. Okay. And it is kind of tongue in cheek, quite frankly. I mean, it's kind of funny, right? But it asks you two things. What are you doing today? And I said, writing an article. And then it said, what do you want people to take from it? And then you have to do a cheesy, cringy worth level. And so here's what it wrote. I'm just going to tell this to you really quickly based on those two things. And I made cringy worth level, top level, like maximum.
Good.
Yesterday I told our IT guy that I wrote an article. I explained thoroughly how I felt before and after. I even shared some advice on how to write an article in case he'd like to do that too. I even gave him my number one tip for success: pick the right words. I was actually very emotional at that moment. He really touched my soul. And after our special moment, you won't believe his response. He looked me right in the eye and said, "Sir, I just asked if you have an HDMI port on your laptop." Now, certainly it's kind of, you know, it's being more silly than anything. But the reason I wanted to bring that up is because, as you said, AI can help us with some things.
Yep.
But that story didn't happen, right? It's made up based on like two inputs I had. So AI certainly can help, but I do agree with you 100% on that. Really quickly, I want to point out, Julio came from one of Maddie's channels. So we're pairing the live stream to all those different channels. And that's done through Restream. So check out Restream.io. They're one of the few, maybe the only live streaming platform that actually allows that. So, how do we, when you move forward though, how do you really create content that works for everybody, that works for the machines, that works for the humans, and how do we make sure it's unique? So I'll put it this way. We had, I think it was Todd Jones was on the show, and he said, we don't need any more top of the funnel content. And I strongly disagree. I think there's plenty of opportunity still if you make it unique.
How do we
do that? Do you agree with that or not?
I think a lot of content that we write is top of funnel. So I want to keep my job. Yes. But So how do we create content that's informed by humans and robots? And then how do we make it unique? So I'll share a little bit about the blogsmith's writing process. We start with keyword research. I mean, it really starts with topic agreement with the client, probably some kind of brief. And then we go in and we do some data finding. And honestly, we do the keyword research and sort of like the SERP, the search engine results page, kind of going through with a fine-tooth comb, really regardless of if the piece itself is meant to rank in search. So even something like an ebook, we're not writing it so that it's going to rank in search. You might create a landing page that you want to rank in search so that people find that ebook. But the ebook itself doesn't necessarily have to like weave in certain keywords, have a certain structure. But we do the keyword research because, like, for example, looking through the SERPs for a primary keyword that you think you're going to use gives a lot of data about humans. It starts with autocomplete. You type in the keyword and then it gives you some other keyword suggestions based on that exact phrase, but then adding on to it. There's also people also ask, which are actual questions that searchers have that they're looking to have answered in relation to that query. So that's human data. It's the robot gave it to me, but it's human data. And then finally, at the bottom of the SERPs, there are related searches, which is kind of like autocomplete. The main difference being that it's using probably slightly different terms, more like synonyms. And so these can be great ideas for what to include in the article that you're writing or the piece of content you're writing. But they can also be really excellent follow-up topics that you can then interlink between. And that also helps with SEO. It helps Google understand the context of your site as a whole, how these topics sort of relate to each other. So that's kind of how we think about it, is, you know, starting with the human in terms of just the topic, going into search and using the robot side of things, but ultimately bringing it back to the human because it's the humans that sort of feed into that search data. How to make it unique? I think there are a couple ways. I think one of the biggest ways is to interview subject matter experts that know things about that topic that probably you don't even know. So it'll give you things to think about that maybe won't even come up in your research because you're talking to somebody who knows this topic inside and out. I think that's the best way to do it. But I think it's also thinking about different ways that you can add things like visuals to an article. Maybe you can make an infographic, maybe you can illustrate some statistics and kind of pepper those in with your written words, because at the end of the day, I think content is about so much more than the written word. It's about the formatting, it's about the visuals, it's about this whole reader experience, really. Other things you can do is like think about a unique angle. There might be sort of a certain way that you're seeing the top search results approach this topic. And maybe you could take a contrarian view, or maybe you could just look at it from the perspective of a different industry or something like that. But yeah, I think it's a matter of definitely studying what's out there, but not just sort of regurgitating it, not taking a slightly different play on, yeah, what's already ranking, but thinking about what you can add to create a truly unique piece of content, because to be fair, we don't need something like what's already out there.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about that, I 100% agree with you, but that is what a lot of companies are still doing. They're just regurgitating and they're going to their content team and they're saying, hey, we need content on this topic.
Right.
Go write it. And you're like, how am I going to write it? Like, we don't know anything about it. We have nothing unique to say. Nobody talks to me. Like, I'm just going to Google for the answer. And that truly does not work anymore. Now, talking and interviewing subject matter experts, 100% agree. And I think that's still a differentiator. What I personally am interested in, the more companies figure that out, and let's say everybody is now doing that, which is fantastic. Right. But at some point, it's not the differentiator anymore. It used to be, because now everybody's doing it. So right. What's the next level up? What's the next thing to get those unique stories? Do you find companies that are they open to having you talk to the experts, or like, is that still a struggle, or is that getting better from years ago?
Sure. Yeah. A couple thoughts. I think one is whenever something is difficult, and I think it is difficult to schedule an interview, come up with questions, conduct the interview, hopefully get really good answers, and then weave that into whatever your basic idea for the structure of the content you're creating already is. I think that I'm not too worried about too many companies sort of like catching on and doing that, because I think that first of all, they need sort of like the people on their team who think like journalists, you know, who can conduct those interviews and come up with the questions. But again, it's also the time and it's also really follow up. And so like my background is sales. So I'm really good at like, if I don't hear from somebody, continuing to be like, hey, just following up on that last message or whatever. I'm pretty good at getting somebody on a call if I really want to. And if I can create like a mutually beneficial situation, even if they are busy, I don't think that that's necessarily like every writer's skill or every company like has sort of the training to do that. So I'm personally not worried about that right now. In terms of taking that to like the next level, and what you could do to go beyond that. Or I guess another question you had was like how difficult it is to maybe meet with like a subject matter expert on, say, for example, the client's team. One thing that we do in our intake form is we ask for a contact, and we're not going to just like contact that person out of the blue. Usually it involves an intro from our main point of contact, introing us to this like subject matter expert contact. But what I've found helps to make it easier to get that person, that subject matter expert, to engage, because they are busy. They have this whole other job. You're kind of asking them to do this whole extra job, especially if you're creating a lot of content. Is I'm going to make it as easy as possible as I can for that person. So I'm going to offer to do like a Zoom interview. We use Fireflies to record and transcribe the interviews and then pass it on to the writer. But if they don't have time to meet, I'm going to give them the option to write out their response. Or we also use a tool called VoiceForm where they can go in and record their response. And I think it's all about making it as easy as possible for that person, but also really respecting their time with like truly great questions that you couldn't just find the answer to on Google. And I think that like a subject matter expert gets excited about opportunities to share their knowledge, especially if I'm going to quote them in the piece, which most of the time that's the point, is to show off this expertise. And so, yeah, just being really respectful of their time and of their expertise with really good questions.
You know, very interesting. Some of these options you mentioned, I never even thought about, you know, and you can even voice dictate your answer and whatnot. The other thing that I like most recently is to, you just do a live stream podcast mm-hmm. recording with the subject matter experts. Now, the biggest downfall on that is if they want to explain things to you, they don't necessarily want to have, you mm-hmm. know, publicize the way they're saying them, that sure. wouldn't work. But you know, with right. experts like you and others, I mean, we just live stream, right? We're just like, here's the interview, and then we'll write an article from that interview, or we use quotes in different articles. So that's another way to get even more content out of that. So very interesting to give people those different options. How, you know, in the last 2 minutes here or so, tell us how, first of all, what are the new rules? So I guess we have like 2.5 minutes, but the new rules in your book. And then also to wrap it up, tell us about your company, who reaches out to you, who do you work with, and you know, who are your perfect clients, so to speak.
Sure. Yeah. To summarize the new rules of content style, I think that it comes down to being very aware both of like your desired audience, but also just this global internet audience that's inevitably going to come across your content. And it's your chance to show that you care about thoughtful word choice, that you care about inclusivity. That's part of the book, is just being thoughtful. And I think like the bigger picture of that is creating a great reader experience. As much as I care about our clients and making them happy, I'm just as, maybe if not more, concerned about that final reader and giving them a truly great experience that helps them find the answer to whatever it is that brought them to this article. So I think that's the big thing. Certainly a lot to dig into. There's 22 chapters in the book that are all focused on different things. The blogs with my company, we are a content agency primarily for B2B technology and software as a service brands. I say primarily we work with brands like WordPress, Webhost, but really anybody who's trying to translate sort of like their knowledge base articles or release notes and things like that into something that sort of the layperson, maybe a small business owner, can use to do something technical. So check us out on theblogsmith.com. Look for my book, Writing for Humans and Robots, on Amazon. It's Kindle and print edition. And then if you want to follow up after the show, I'm at Maddie Osman on Twitter. So that's my most active social network besides LinkedIn.
Most active, that's for sure. I think that's where we connected many, many, many years ago. It is good to hear that B2B companies are seeing the value in content strategy and content marketing and informational content. So good luck with the book. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. Really appreciate you kind of diving into that topic with me today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me and sharing your platform. And I'm glad that we were able to get some comments from my side as well.
Yep. Awesome. It's a fantastic tool. Restream.io. Check them out. /join/CTRAP. I think gets you $10 off. Until next time.
That's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in. Please rate and review our show on your favorite podcast channels. And don't forget to share this episode with your networks. We appreciate you. Until next time, let the best stories win.